Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Chatting with the Lightkeeper. As always, I am Edward, and hopefully this little episode will be kind of a little lighthouse or a guiding beam, if you will, of a lighthouse to help you better understand relationships in the wonderful world of BDSM and kink. 2 weeks ago, we talked about vetting, which is basically getting to know a person to make sure that they are who they say they are, make sure that they're a good person, not a twat waffle. And then after that, last week we talked about dating, because verified that indeed this is an amazing person, and so we date them to get to figure out whether we click and work and all those wonderful things that go into building up to a relationship. So this week, we're going to sort of tie the knot, if you will, excuse the pun, but we're going to tie the knot and talk about relationships in the lifestyle. That doesn't mean marriage. I know that there are marriage-averse people out there who have been there, done it, have the t-shirt, and are never going back to that, and that's absolutely fantastic. I just thought it would be a little punny to title the episode Tying the Knot, since, you know, rope and bondage and that whole shenanigans. So before we dive in, let's start with just a few misconceptions that people seem to often have about relationships in the lifestyle. First is that somehow when you say I do, whether that's, you know, I do submit to you, or I do agree to dominate you, or hey, we do agree to be kinky together, whatever it is for you. But one of the misconceptions out there, and it drives me batty, but hey, this is the year of consent, where I've sort of made the New Year's resolution that I would talk about consent as much as possible. So we'll get the consent part out of the way right away. But the myth is that once you do say that I do, for whatever that means for you and your relationship, that consent is going out the window. Because you've consented before, and now that you're in this relationship, consent doesn't need to happen anymore. And that is far, far from the truth, because consent is ongoing. Negotiations are ongoing, and since you're entering a relationship with a lovely person or amazing people, there's going to be more consenting that needs to happen, more negotiations, because as you evolve, as the relationship evolves, things are going to change. There will be new things to try, things that maybe you liked once that you don't enjoy anymore. So the whole consent conversation is ongoing. And the mythology, of course, is that once it's consented, it's therefore, you know, it's on the books forever and ever. And that's not the case. And of course, when vanilla people hear things like that, they think that therefore the relationship, because it's lifestyle related, is therefore abusive. It is not, because the consent portion is always there. Remember, the biggest thing that separates BDSM or kink from abuse is that one word stops BDSM, whether that's a safe word, you know, red, pineapple, tarantula, whatever your safe word is, even no stops it. Where abuse, you can talk and talk and talk until the cows proverbially come home and nothing is going to change. Abuse is not rooted in consent, and consent, unfortunately, doesn't play a factor there. So, okay, that consenting bit is out of the way. We are now going to, I don't think we're going to revisit consent the rest of the episode. Another misconception is that lifestyle relationships are like always kinky all the time, and it's, you know, it's a whole lot of doing the dance with no pants, kinky ways, you know, and every way from Sunday all the time. And it's not the case. It's a normal, traditional relationship in the way that, you know, your vanilla cousins would understand a relationship to be, but it also has the added dimension of the lifestyle, however you choose to bring it to life in your relationship. And remember, there's no right or wrong way. There's no true way to do it. It's a matter of what works for you and your partner or partners. So it is not always kinky all the time. And in fact, there will probably be less kink than those vanilla friends and people would assume it's going to be much more of a traditional relationship with the kink as a part of it. Another myth is that because it's a lifestyle relationship, it is always intense and super serious. It's not. There's laughter, there's hard moments, there's good moments, there's good days, bad days, and go on half mad days. It's not always intense, it's not always serious. And in that regard, it is just like all of our other relationships, from friendship to really relationships we have with peers at work. It's sometimes serious, sometimes not. And depending on what's going on in life, probably somewhere in between most of the time. So those are some of the common myths that are out there about the lifestyle. The other thing I want to chat real quickly about is that BDSM and kink relationships, the level of the BDSM will ebb and flow with what's going on around it. Sometimes it'll be quite kinky and quite adventurous. And other times, perhaps life will be more serious and take more time and sort of push the fantastic and kinktastic side, kind of put it maybe on the back burner or where it doesn't play as prevalent of a role. It's going to ebb and flow with how life is going and the pressures life is putting on the relationship. So it's important that with the ebb and flow, and sometimes, we have challenges from time management to family commitments to work life, all of that can come into play. So it's important that you don't let the lifestyle side of it sort of fade away, which can happen, unfortunately, perhaps easier than we would like to think it could. So it's very important, our vanilla friends will talk about scheduling dates. Even, married couples will schedule date nights. And it's very important that if life is, getting a little hectic, go ahead and schedule a kinky night in or kinky night out, whatever floats your boat. But you have to at times make time for the lifestyle. And that's something where rituals and protocols can be very, very helpful. They can just be little things added to the day, which serves as kind of a little reminder every day of the kinky commitments that you have made in the relationship. Another challenge that happens as we move along and move into a relationship is for dominance, especially in its consistency. And I know that sounds kind of strange because, dominants are supposed to be consistent and always there. And I don't mean that the one partner, the dominant partner, is suddenly pulling back or is not being there for their submissive. That's not what I'm saying. It's consistency. And that's the consistency with upholding the discipline aspect of the relationship, should that be part of your kinktastic relationship. Remember, there's no right or wrong way to do this. So if your relationship is just sort of kinky based, there might not be the discipline side of it. But for many, it is part of it. And it is a challenge. I'm speaking from my own experience. When you are in a committed relationship with a submissive and they come to you, the dominant, and say, I violated this rule or I broke this guideline today. And for a submissive to come and share that to their dominant, it's kind of emotional. It is emotional, not kind of, it is emotional for them. They are having to come and say, hey, I violated or I did something wrong that we had said we weren't going to do anymore. Whatever it is, they're admitting to having a faux pas. And knowing how emotional that can be, and at this point you care deeply, perhaps even love your partner, it's a challenge for the dominant then to sometimes uphold the correction side of that. You can see that it's troubled them. You can see that they're kind of, in a way, hurting because they feel that they've let you down, which I think for most people is one of the things that none of us want to do to a partner, is make them feel like we let them down. And sometimes breaking a rule or a guideline can make a submissive feel like they've let their dominant down. And so it can be very easy to sort of talk through the situation with the submissive and then not discipline them, like you would, for example, if you caught them red-handed in with the hand in the cookie jar. So the drawback is that then the discipline doesn't stay consistent, because we realize as a dominant that they've made a mistake, they feel sorry, we've talked about it, and we let it go. And then it becomes the, that consistency factor where, well, last week you didn't discipline the submissive, and now this week you're going to, or it was, well, last two times they admitted to making a mistake, you didn't uphold the discipline, and now you are. And that's one of the things that many submissives are looking for, is consistency and that discipline. They know they've made a mistake, and they're expecting to be corrected or punished for it. And so it's very important for dominance in a relationship to still uphold that, even though it can be a challenge because you see the remorse, you see the, you see that it's bothering them. But that's one of the challenges that dominance will face. The next thing that everyone's going to face, whether you're a dominant, submissive, or a switch, is what I term our I don't want to days. And we all have bad days. Normally, I don't want to do it days are caused by external pressures. They're not caused by something going wrong in the relationship itself. In my life, the I don't want to days are primarily a byproduct of a challenging day or a challenging week at work. And work is one of those evils that presses us and can sort of squeeze our noggins and drain out some of our go-go juice. And those challenging times are there for both dominants and submissives. For submissives, there will be days when those pressures are there, and perhaps your dominant has asked you to do something for them, and you just don't want to be told anymore by anyone to do anything. And you want to just do what you want to do, and you don't care about doing it because your dominant asks you. You're just kind of perhaps angry, or perhaps just incredibly frustrated. And those are hard times. It's those times that you have to say, okay, I made a commitment that I would follow my dominant in these areas, and this is one of the areas that I've consented to. I don't wish to revoke that consent. I just don't want to do it today. And those are the days when you just sort of have to buckle down and accept that this is a commitment you made. And even though you don't want to, you honor that commitment. Now, everything in DS, of course, has a flip side, if you will. And dominants have those days as well. It's not days that it's not that we don't want to lead our partners. It's just we are frustrated, perhaps fed up. I call it being decisioned out. I can remember a day where the company I worked for at the time was going through a corporate restructuring. In other words, we're going to lay off a whole bunch of people. And since I was a wonderful management position, I had to evaluate the team that worked under me and basically decide who gets to stay and who gets to go. Along with, if they decided to let me go, who I would pick to replace me. And it was an incredibly, incredibly stressful day, to figure out how I was going to optimize my headcount. Doesn't that sound like fun? Hey, I didn't get laid off today, or I didn't get fired today. I was optimized. Yeah, good corporate word there. But that day was incredibly, incredibly stressful. There was no getting around it. There was no, it was a surprise dumped on me, and everyone else in my position, around the world. And we had to deal with it. And by the end of that day, I did not want to make another decision. And the submissive that I was in a relationship at that time. We had plans that night. Of course, it's a Friday that they dump this on you. Happy weekend. And we had plans. And so I arrived, and she was like, "Well, what would you like me to wear tonight? Where do you want to go for dinner tonight?" Routine questions that normally I would be, oh man, all about. I'm a guy who loves to pick the outfit that my submissive is going to wear when we're going out together. I love that. Or even picking it for when they go to work. Hey, today wear this. It's one of my things that I like. It's my jam. So I get there, and I didn't want to make those decisions. And I thought about at first doing the fake it thing, fake the happy, fake the pick this, and just picking a favorite restaurant and just rolling through the night, sort of faking, basically faking happy, kind of like I did all day at work. Oh, everything's great. It's a great day. But instead, I surprised myself and chose to be brutally honest and say, here's the day I had. Here's what happened. And I just don't feel like making another choice. And I said, I know you've been waiting for me patiently to get here to, pick what you were going to wear. You had things prepared, different outfits. And I said, I'm decisioned out. I don't want to make another choice. And we talked about, my day, which was incredibly helpful. Of course, when you have a partner and you talk about what's going on, and it sort of takes some of that burden off you, which was very helpful. But I still was just mentally exhausted. And the beautiful thing is, she knew what I liked, so she picked an outfit that I liked, and said, "How about we go, if you don't object, how about we go here for dinner," which was a place that we both enjoyed, perhaps me more than her. So it was sort of a nod to, I know you're having a bad day, and I know you really like this place, even though it's not my favorite. Let's go here. And it was absolutely wonderful. But the lesson that I learned there is it's okay to have those days as a dominant. They're gonna happen. But when they happen, it's important to be honest and talk about them. And I know it sounds like a little thing, and somewhere there's an online dominant who might hear this and want to threaten my dominant society card and want to have it pulled because I would feel like that. But it's a very natural thing. And dominance, you will experience being decisioned out or whatever the term is for you. Of course, it's happened other times since then. That was the first time I reached that sort of boiling point. And sometimes perhaps doing a scene after dinner helped sort of work out some of those frustrations. Once again, big fan of spanking when it comes to things like that. And so for me, after dinner and whatnot, I was up for a spanking scene, which helped me reset my brain. We talk often about how play can reset a submissive's mind, but it can do the same for a dominant. But of course, a scene isn't necessarily a cure-all all the time. Sometimes you're just not in the mood, or sometimes we're so drained that we just want to curl up with our partner and doze off and have a great sleep. But there's going to be days where there's challenges where you're not going to want to do it. From whatever side of the slash that you are on. So there's that. Another thing that'll happen is, even though it's a lifestyle relationship, it's not a cure-all. And what I mean by that is you're going to still have disagreement with your partner or partner. You're still going to disagree at times. You're not going to see things always the same way. Now, a disagreement is not an excuse for a dominant to punish or correct their submissive. Absolutely not. It's two people seeing things differently, which means you need to have a conversation and work it out and figure out how it's going to work, find common ground, and work through the disagreement. It's not a time to be dom or sub. It's a time to be partners and work through it. Something that can help during perhaps stressful disagreements is to kind of include some of the formalities of the lifestyle, perhaps call the dominant by their preferred honorific. So in a way, you are paying homage and showing respect to them. And if you are a dominant, using your submissive's pet name. So you are acknowledging the yes dynamic, that yes, it's there, but we are partners having a discussion to figure this out. It is not about the submissive just relenting to do what the dominant asks. It's about finding a mutually agreeable path forward for everyone in the partnership. And speaking of that, obviously, when you're in a relationship with somebody, even if it is DS related, there are still going to be decisions that need to be decided as partners, not dominant and submissive. A couple of things jump to mind. For example, buying a car. Buying a car is a major purchase. That is not something that the dominant should thump their chest and say, "You shall buy this Subaru, my super submissive, because this is the car that I have chosen for you." You're being partners. And so it's one thing if one partner says, you know, "Hey, that super Subaru, I think, would be a great fit because, you know, we like to go skiing and it has all-wheel drive and it's kind of raised up so it gets through the snow better and they're great for crash testing and, you know, we have kids and blah, blah, blah." But you work through decisions like that as partners, not as dominant and submissive. So it's very important to remember when it comes to big things, you're partners, you're not just DS. Another thing to understand is not only does the amount of BDSM kink ebb and flow in a relationship over time, your relationship is going to be evolving as well. We're not the same people we were yesterday and a year ago or 5 years ago. And we can talk about where we want to be tomorrow and where we want to be as a person in a week and then where we plan to be next year at this time and 5 years from now. But the thing is, we're going to be evolving and we're going to be changing. And that is going to happen in your lifestyle relationship as well. And it's very important to work together to evolve together or evolve the partnership together. I know I've mentioned it before, but I have some friends that their partnership started out as a DS relationship. And he was dominant and she was submissive. And now, 20 some years later, they've moved into the master-slave dynamic. That's what works for them. Except the slave is the husband, and she is the mistress. So they, in a way, totally flip-flopped as they grew together. And while that might sound extreme, and it is kind of an extreme example, but you have to be aware that things are going to evolve. Or there are partners that start out as DS and they both end up sort of on the D side and have to figure that out as they go because they love each other and don't want the partnership to end just because their sort of BDSM side has evolved a little differently than what they thought it would be 10, 15 years prior. So it's very important to understand that there's going to be evolution. And part of our commitment to our partners is working to evolve together. And sometimes evolving is something that takes a little outside help. It is never a bad thing to consider sitting down with a counselor or some sort of provider that specializes in relationships and sort of getting a tune up on your relationship. Find out what you can do better, or perhaps how you can communicate better. And you can find providers now that are well versed in the lifestyle. So you can sit down with somebody who understands BDSM dynamics and they can help you or give you ideas on how to handle a sticky situation or just sort of have a relationship tune up. Find out where you are and how you can be a better partner for your partner through the process. Relationships are sort of big deals for us. And when we look at our other, you know, big items that we have in our lives, whether it's a house or a car, they all require us to do maintenance on them in order to keep them working properly. Even small things require maintenance. My coffee pot requires maintenance. So it's about sort of putting in the work and doing the maintenance, and sometimes it's not a bad thing to talk to a provider about it. So consider that as you move along, and it's not a bad thing, and it's not saying that there's a deep problem. It's just an outside person can perhaps see new ways to approach things, and it helps keep your relationship going if that is something you would consider. And it's not a bad thing to think about and consider, especially with the added dimension of BDSM or kink in your relationship. Now, when we started, I kind of made the joke about how there are people out there who have been married, been there, done that, have the t-shirt, and are not going to get married again. And other people, marriage can be a part of their relationship. But of course, here in the world of BDSM, we're unique. We've got to be unique. We always seem to have uniqueness about us somewhere. And when it comes to showing our commitment in BDSM, once again, we're unique. We go beyond or different than to be different. Yes, there are BDSM couples who are married traditionally, like you would imagine, and write their vows and exchange the rings and do all that jazz. And then there's also within BDSM a type of ceremony or a type of commitment that is out there that is representative of marriage. But of course, you don't need to get a license for this. But it's called collaring, and it's a ceremony that partners engage in, which is akin to a wedding ceremony, where there's vows and the whole shebang. It can be done with invited guests, or it can just be done in private between partners. But rather than putting a ring on a finger, the submissive or submissives will wear a collar around their neck to symbolize their commitment to their partner. And when it comes to those collars, we often see in either BDSM art or even BDSM porn, where a submissive will be wearing a collar of some kind. Sometimes it may look like the collar that your dog Fido has around their neck, and other times it could be an elaborate necklace or a steel band, or a choker type cloth necklace. Really, there's all sorts of variants and ways you can do it and have it look, but it's a symbol within the lifestyle of a commitment that is on the level of being married. There are a lot of people in today's world where coloring doesn't hold the same value it used to. Unfortunately, especially online, you see people where they were, they're collared to this dominant this month, and next month they're collared in a relationship with another dominant. But it's no different than our vanilla friends. I can look in my friend circle, and yes, I have, a good dear friend that has been married more times than I have a finger and thumb on one hand. And recently got engaged to go for it again. And while I do wish nothing but the best for them, it's just sort of like, oh, here we go again. At least at this point in their journey through marriages, they just no longer do the big wedding, thank goodness. So, but still, it's one of those things. But in BDSM, the coloring is a commitment. It's a huge commitment if you think about it, just sort of like a vanilla wedding, if you will. It has, rituals that go, they exchange vows. Also, part of the vows oftentimes is an exchange of consent, which is kind of neat and kind of awesome. And once, even though they've consented in their vows or have an exchange of consent as a separate part of the ceremony, just like everything in BDSM or in kink, that exchange of consent is negotiable and revocable, even 2 minutes afterwards or 2 seconds afterwards. And of course, the big culmination of a collaring ceremony is where the dominant places the collar on their submissive. So it really is a sort of a ceremony to promote or express those in that partnership, their trust, the power exchange, and the emotional connection they have. So it's a wonderful, wonderful ceremony. And just because, for example, if someone is collared, it doesn't necessarily mean, if you see somebody wearing a collar, there are very different styles of collars that people can wear. They can, have a playful collar for when it's playtime. They might have an everyday collar, which a lot of times is just a necklace that in the vanilla world, no one would think any different of it. It's just a necklace that they wear, or perhaps it's a ring, or it's something that they wear every day that no one in the vanilla world would bat an eyeball or eye without bat an eye eyelid or whatever it is we would do there. Words fumble there, but there's that. And then there's the formal collar, which would be the what they might wear to a gathering, a formal gathering of their kinktastic friends, that is very formal and is very not outlandish, that's not the right word, but it is a symbol that would turn a vanilla person's eyes. That's probably the best way to do it. But also, it's important that we understand that collars are not always used just for the significance of a relationship. If you see a submissive wearing a collar, it can mean that they are in a committed relationship, or it could mean that they have collared themselves, that they are holding themselves up to a very high standard, and they want to use the motivational techniques of the lifestyle to help motivate them to succeed or to achieve certain things. And so they've collared themselves to sort of, in a way, dumb themselves into success. And if you do go to a in-person play party, sometimes submissives who are unpartnered will wear a play collar, because it's the atmosphere and they like how it looks. And it helps them get into perhaps a submissive mindset. So it's very important that a collar, while often signifies a deep connected relationship, it doesn't always. So it's just important to understand that, but also, of course, be respectful if you see a submissive wearing a collar. My advice would be to assume that they are in a relationship unless they tell you otherwise. So there's all of that that goes into it, and collars and the collaring ceremony can be absolutely amazing. It's just a great way to sort of formalize the commitment between partners and invoke the lifestyle. Now, another thing that happens many times within BDSM, since meeting people can be a challenge, is that people can find themselves in long distance relationships. And while long distance relationships aren't for everybody, they do happen, and they're probably more common in the lifestyle because the dating pool is more limited. So let's just talk about a few tips for long distance relationships. First of all, anytime you have a lifestyle relationship, communication is very essential. But in long distance, where you're not seeing each other every day, or you're not coming home to your partner every day, communication is extra important because you just don't have that physical touch every day. So communication is even more important when distance is involved. And it's also important to sort of have a plan as you move into a long distance relationship. And that plan is, how is it going to work? Who's going to move? Oftentimes we have careers, we have children, we have family. There's all sorts of, things that are going on in our lives, and it can be very easy to find yourself in a relationship with an absolutely amazing person, but no plan to actually have it move forward. Or one person is ready to move forward to in person right away, while the other person needs to feel a little bit more time before they're ready to jump into, say, living with their partner. So it's very important to talk about the who's going to move, how it's going to look, when are you going to be comfortable for, what sort of things do you foresee as you need to feel comfortable? What sort of time frame are we putting on it? It's also very important to plan visits, to sort of plan physical time together. We can plan our visits using, technology. Okay, Tuesday night we're gonna video chat, and Wednesday, you're busy. Thursday, I'm busy. So Friday, we'll do another video chat. And it's technology is wonderful. It allows us to connect and to really bridge a lot of the distance that's out there. But it's still very important to plan those visits together, plan together time. I mean, you're in a relationship with somebody, you want to spend time with them. So it's very important to plan those physical times together. And it's also very important and it's very helpful when you have a plan to spend, say, a long weekend together or perhaps take a vacation together for a week. Already know when you're going to have that next time together. So it's not, oh, this was great, I'll see you soon, maybe, possibly. Have that next visit planned, maybe not totally planned, but have that already sort of on the books for each partner, so you have something to look forward to. It's not just I'll see you when. Another thing that can be very helpful for long distance relationships as well as in person relationships, but establishing goals or having rituals to reinforce that connection and the dynamic. And it can be little things from daily tasks to check-ins or just a simple little saying that happens before somebody calls good night, which is especially important since sometimes distance involves, time differences. There's a great app that's out there. It's called Obedience, and it's available for Android or for Apple. And it's just a sort of a kinky habit tracker, if you will, for people who are involved in a BDSM dynamic. It lets sort of clearly lays out rules and tasks and things like that. So even if you're apart, they can be checked off and rewards can be put in there for the dominant to give to the submissive for achieving their goals. It's a fun way to connect and also keep up on, for example, daily goals or daily rituals. And that way, with a simple glance at your phone, you can either see how you're doing with achieving what you need to for the day for your partner, or see where you need to pick it up, or see how your partner is doing, without actually being, perhaps you don't have time to reach out at that moment, but you're curious on if they've achieved a task that you've asked them. So it's a handy dandy newfangled app that is out there. It's not new, it's been out there for a while, but if you are finding yourself in a long distance relationship, consider the Obedience app. Or even if you're in an in-person relationship, the app can be helpful. Remember, apps don't solve everything, but they can make our lives easier. Play is an important part of growth in lifestyle relationships, and we can explore and do a lot of play virtually. Of course, it's not the same as in person, but you can still explore a lot virtually, which is fantastic. Another thing to remember, even though it's virtual, there still needs to be aftercare that happens. Of course, you have to alter aftercare, so it's virtual aftercare. But if you're going to engage in virtual play, plan the virtual aftercare as you plan your playtime. Another wonderful thing that can help long distance partners stay connected is kind of working together on educational things. If your partner's curious about a fantasy or a new type of play or new terminology, whatever it is, you can perhaps read the same book or write in a virtual journal together where you both share your thoughts and then, share them, compare them. And use education about the lifestyle as a way to stay connected. It's very important too to stay flexible and patient in a long distance relationship because not everything is going to flow just how we want it to. Flexibility and patience are key. Understanding that schedules change, commitments change, all sorts of things. Even if you had plans to see your amazing person or people in 2 weeks, understand that a sick child or a change in a work assignment, all sorts of things can throw a monkey into those plans. So it's important to be patient and be flexible. Yes, of course, there can be disappointment with that, but it's so important to maintain your patience and your flexibility. and celebrate. I mean, even if you're in an in-person relationship, but even more so, if you're distant, celebrate the wins, celebrate milestones together. Even if it's virtual, try to celebrate as much as you can together. Celebration is fantastic. It's positive. It's uplifting. Celebrate the little things. Celebrate the big things, but celebrate together. So don't forget to celebrate. And finally, the last bit of advice, for those of you that find yourselves in a long distance relationship, self-care. Self-care is so important to your mental and emotional well-being. It's very important that you engage in self-care, not only for yourself, but as a couple or a throuple or however your relationship flows. But make sure that you have well-defined boundaries, you engage in self-care activities, and you're not afraid to reach out and say, "Hey, I'm struggling," when struggle times happen. So those are just some tips and tricks that I have if you found yourself in a long distance relationship or in a good old fashioned in-person relationship, whatever and however that works for you. I hope that this podcast has helped shed some light on what to expect or new ways to approach a potential issue or see something new as we worked our way through a wonderful world of from vetting to dating to relationship. It's sort of a comparison in my mind of I enjoy watching the old Grand Tour slash Top Gear presenters, which people either like or they don't like, especially Jeremy Clarkson. He seems to be rather polarizing, is rather polarizing. But they did a an episode where they took a drive. Of course, this was men. So they started in the big town of Wank, and then they went to kissing, to petting. I believe the town's in Austria, and I think it's pronounced Fucking, but of course it's spelled fucking. And then they were going to end in wedding. But it's sort of kind of that little bit reminds me of how we went the last couple of weeks going with vetting to dating to relationship. So hopefully you found that bit exciting and helpful. So we are going to kind of stay within the realm of relationships next week, but we're going to talk a little bit about poly relationships and poly dynamics, what they are, how they work. Not because everyone who's involved in BDSM is poly. It is not the case at all. But whether you're poly or not, in this lifestyle, you do run into many people who are poly, because the space around BDSM and kink is so open-minded. There you will run into people who are poly and perhaps not even kinky, but because the community as a whole under that big BDSM umbrella is welcoming and open, they find the community is a safe place to open up and talk about or just be themselves and be poly. So we're going to talk a little bit about poly and poly relationships, which even if you're not, that's not your preferred relationship style, I think there'll be some things that you can learn and pick up upon. So thank you all for listening this week. Once again, if you haven't already, please, wherever you're listening, just scroll down, tap the follow button so you get notified whenever a new episode comes out, which of course are on Tuesday mornings, at least Tuesday mornings in my neck of the woods, might be afternoon for you. But thank you for listening, and I hope everyone has a fabulous week, and I can't wait to chat with you all again next week. Until then, toodaloo.